Jesus. Yell at what?
I'm walking here.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming live on all those smart speakers, the KTTH app, or everywhere you can get a stream. Washington's first director of equity, she was fired after making racist comments. We talked about that. Turns out there is way more to this story than I realized, and that is what's trending.
What's trending? Equity.
I've got all the details online at ktth.com, but I found this story to be so incredibly interesting. We broke the story a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, that Dr. Karen Johnson, who lists her pronouns as she, her, beloved, that she was unceremoniously fired by Governor Jay Inslee. That happened on May 17th. Now, she runs the newly established Office of Equity, the OOE, which was tasked with fighting systemic racism that Democrats pretend permeates government institutions. It is completely contrived, and it is an agency or a department, an office, that is merely a virtue signal and propaganda outlet. Their intent is to indoctrinate people via DE&I training. Now, when we broke that story, we didn't know specifically why she was let go. We got these comments from the governor's office that kind of gave a hint that basically sounded like she was a bad boss and she wasn't properly running the office. And then we found out she was being investigated and was, in fact, investigated by a third party, an independent investigator, due to some comments that were made and actions that she allegedly took that made a lot of people uncomfortable. Let's put it that way. And I read this investigation, and I had all sorts of conflicting thoughts, because on the one hand, I think Johnson is a victim of hypersensitive ninnies, a bunch of activist employees, the very type of person that you would expect to go work for the Office of Equity. And she probably should have seen all of the complaints that she suffered through. She should have seen that coming. But on the other hand, she failed to play by the rules that she helped create, that activists created. So I do think she deserved to be terminated. Now, a lot of what's in this investigation, the findings and complaints from seven current and former members of the staff there, most of it had to do with management style, management issues. And the bulk of those, I think, were completely frivolous. They focus more on, how do I put this? Staff members being babies. Is that, I think that's a technical way to talk
about
it.
That sounds technical.
Instead of actual legitimate complaints, some of the complaints. She didn't provide clarity for the work that they do. You don't know what the work is at the Office of Equity? Are we pretending you don't know what you're doing? Okay, fine. Fine. She didn't communicate that well. She micromanaged staff. That was another allegation. Maybe you needed to micromanage because you're not very good, because maybe you didn't realize what it was your goal was supposed to be for the organization, despite her maybe telling you multiple times, but you're not a great employee, so she had to micromanage. Maybe. Or maybe she's just a micromanager and that's her style. Sometimes it works for people. Oftentimes I feel it doesn't, but for some people they need that. And maybe she had a whole bunch of people where she thought they needed that. My favorite one, and this is why I'm so antagonistic towards the staff members, they complained about the workload, forcing them to have to sacrifice a healthy work-life balance. Oh, you babies.
Oh, no.
Oh, I had to work 8 hours today, and I had to go into the office. That's basically what we're talking about here. And for those complaints, I pushed them aside. Your children, she probably needed to micromanage you, because if that's what you're complaining about, oh, you're the worst kind of employee. But then came the comments that she allegedly made that makes the story a little bit ironic, because she's the one who's supposed to get rid of institutionalized racism and train the racism out of you. She said she doesn't trust Mexicans. Oh, okay. Got it. One white employee said they, quote, perceived evidence of bias against Mexicans. Why? Because the claim is that she referenced a quote-unquote self-identified Mexican. I don't know what that means. Is the person Mexican or not?
Sounds like they are.
Oh my God. This is what she allegedly said. Quote, "This may take some time for me because I generally distrust Mexican people. Mexican people have the option of being white when it's convenient for them." Now, another employee who happens to be Hispanic, weirdly didn't say self-identified as Hispanic, just labels
the
person
Hispanic. Well, what's the difference between Hispanic?
Well, Hispanic doesn't mean Mexican. But this person complained that Dr. Johnson created what's being described as an us versus them mentality within the office. And they say the employee alleged Johnson singled them out as not having, quote unquote, lived experiences when it comes to racism, comparing them to white coworkers. So because you're white or because you're Mexican, you can, quote unquote, pass as white. You don't really have the same experiences as I do as a black woman. But Dr. Karen Johnson's a black woman. Now, my favorite part, I think, was Johnson had a metaphor that she used. And I have not seen this reported anywhere. She said she rules with brass knuckles and a velvet glove. Have you ever heard of that before? I'm vaguely familiar with that.
Can't
but you know,
I have.
You know what it's telling you.
I know what it implies.
It implies white supremacy violence, according to one coworker.
Okay.
I am not making that up.
Okay.
An employee complained, quote, that this metaphor was associated with white supremacy because of its violence. No, it's not, and no, it wasn't. That's a stupid response. And I know people are, there's no, you know, the feelings are their own. Yeah, they're your own. Just because you have irrational feelings does not mean that I'm going to accept it. Rules with brass knuckles and a velvet rope, or velvet glove, is not associated with white supremacy. What in God's name are you talking about? Where does that even come from? Well, seriously, where does that even come from? You're talking to someone who is black, so you can't even argue because you're saying the violence part is brass knuckles. Okay, we'll pretend that that's a valid complaint. If it was done by a white dude, okay, at least I can understand you're stupid. But in this case, I don't understand it. I seriously don't understand it. Johnson was accused of gender stereotyping and bias. The report said one white employee was told not to wear her hair in a braid because it was cultural appropriation. Another said she was singled out for being overweight. Johnson asked the employee allegedly, "You want to be married and have a family, don't you? If so, you have to take care of yourself." She also allegedly told two women to wear lipstick. They didn't provide any context for that, so I don't know, but that's you're not supposed to do that. I got in trouble for telling you to wear lipstick the other day.
That was for a different reason.
Yeah, but I still learned my lesson. So Johnson met with the investigators the first time. Second time, she said, yeah, no, I'm not going to do this. And she did. I like this part because she tried to turn herself into the victim here. She basically took the position as, quote, "It's non-negotiable." What's non-negotiable? Triangulating. She wanted to be able to talk directly to the people or have the complainants talk directly to her so they could hash things out. And so she declined, according to this investigation, the second meeting. She wrote in an email, quote, "My truth," whenever someone starts with "my truth," it means they're giving opinion, and it is not truth. It is not their truth. It is their opinion. Truth and opinion are different things. Truth is fact. Opinion is not. "My truth is that I am more than willing to make myself available to meet with you and the persons bringing the allegations / concerns, as is my custom. Seeking reconciliation is more important to me than seeking to prove who is right." Okay, fair enough. She's principled and she got fired. So I think we can all objectively say comments that she allegedly made to you and I, people who are listening, are objectively racist, right? To say, "I don't trust Mexicans." Yeah, that is racist. That is wrong. It is bigoted. But it's not racist to the far left. I don't know if you caught this, but as I was going through all of the complaints, specifically around the content, the actual words that were allegedly spoken, she made comments that are common beliefs and criticisms coming from the radical left. She was being racist in a way that left-wing activists are commonly racist. Her complaint with the Mexican comment was that the person is too white, that you can pass as white. That is commonly said on the far left. Commonly. They say that very frequently, that you don't truly understand because you are passable as white. They say that a lot. The whole idea that there is this us versus them mentality. You come from an office that quite literally creates an us versus them when you say white people have privilege that no one else has can see, including them. It's unearned privilege, and they have to atone for a white supremacist past that they benefited from. Does that not create an us versus them mentality? That's the training. That's the training. The whole brass knuckles thing and white supremacy. Everyone in the far left, when they don't like something, they'll claim white supremacy. They do this all the time. This is an office that is designed to find racism in everything, all while they're pretending to uproot systemic racism. And I suspect the people just didn't like her. And they used their own rules against her. I guarantee you there are people on that staff who don't disagree with anything she said and have probably said and believe things that are way worse, all instructed, informed by their far left worldview. They just don't like her. And maybe they have a perfect reason to dislike her. Maybe she's a horrible boss. Maybe she's just unpleasant to be around. I don't know, obviously. But there's no way that they were offended by any of her comments, because I think they believe in them. And I find it amusing, I suppose, that they're using their own rules. They're weaponizing them, even though they would all violate these rules, I'm willing to bet, against this woman. Against, by the way, a black woman. It's pointing out the irony.
You just think she's that intolerable to be around?
I think they think she's intolerable. And maybe she is. Maybe she's not. I honestly, obviously, I do not know. She could be a wonderful person, and she's surrounded by crazy people. Who do you think would work for the Office of Equity? Pretty far to the left individuals, right?
Yeah, your activist kind of crowd.
The anti-racist, the whites, the white Karens. Are all Karens white?
I think so.
I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it's just women who complain.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Well, I'm glad it's expanded.
I like how some people say, that's a racial slur now. No, it's, oh, shut up. Stop. Push the button.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
Not good news. Not good news at all. A federal judge today rejected a request to block Washington State's legislation that would ban assault weapons. Certain assault weapons, they claim, but really it's a long list. It bans a huge chunk of guns. It was signed into law by Governor Jay Inslee. It was almost immediately subject to a lawsuit. And according to the judge, who ruled in a way that makes it very clear that this is someone who is an activist judge, his name is Robert Bryan. He's based out of Tacoma. He said in this case, considering the exceptional dangerousness of these weapons, the public interest in their regulation by the state outweighs the plaintiff's desire to purchase more assault weapons. In light of recent mass deaths caused by assailants using assault weapons, it is appropriate for governmental bodies to find ways to protect the public from dangerous weapons within the limits of the Second Amendment. That is so incredibly partisan. So remarkably partisan. It almost sounds like it was written by some flack for the Democrat Party as a press release. It's embarrassing. Now, am I shocked that a local judge would hold this opinion? No. A judge that's based in Seattle, they're all the same for the most part. And this, of course, is going to be appealed. And then it'll be appealed again, no matter what the ruling is. This is going to make it all the way to the Supreme Court. But at some point, they're going to recognize you are not following our clear guidance on Second Amendment issues. It doesn't matter that the gun is, quote unquote, dangerous. That has no bearing whatsoever in this. Not according to the Supreme Court, which basically says to again, give sort of a 101 definition. If it is a gun that is widely available, it is protected under the Second Amendment. That is the position of the Supreme Court. That is the position that they said judges have to view all of these stories through. And they chose not to do that. And as a result, we have to deal with even more time in which our rights are being violated. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Cornel West announced that he's running for president. And I think if you do not vote for him, if you're a progressive Generation Z activist, if what's that kid's name?
Harry Sisson.
If Harry Sisson doesn't vote for Cornel West, racist.
Yeah.
He's a racist.
100%.
You're choosing the old white guy over a black activist?
Huh. You're making good points.
I know. I think every single progressive should vote for him.
In these bleak times, I have decided to run for truth and justice, which takes the form of running for president of the United States.
Yeah.
As a candidate for the People's Party. I enter in the quest for truth. I enter in the quest for justice. And the presidency is just one vehicle.
He actually just pulled a video from the 70s and he replayed it as his announcement. This is the fun part in all of this. You've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr., obviously Jr., pulling about 20-25% of the vote so far, according to polls. Is it that high? I don't know. But let's just assume for the sake of this argument, it is. You've got Marianne Williamson pulling in 7-ish points. She's a joke candidate, but 7% matters. Cornel West, he's going to take votes to the extent that people would be interested in voting for him from the left. He's not taking votes from the right. We're getting to the point where it's very, very, very dangerous if you are Joe Biden. Very dangerous. Especially in the context of Cornel West. Now, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., perhaps after he loses the primary, and he's going to lose at this point, he becomes a third party. That's a big threat. Or he just goes away and does the right thing from the party perspective. But Cornel West, let's say he pulls in 2%. Just 2% of the vote, just across the board. Had that occurred under the last election, Donald Trump would have won easily because of those 2 percentage points. And that's why you're hearing a lot more concern coming from folks on the left, calling out Robert Kennedy, calling out Cornel West, calling out Marianne Williamson. They're going to start attacking these people in a big way. They're going to try to completely silence them by not giving them any coverage. They're going to realize that in a world of social media, that doesn't work. And then they're going to go on the attack. And while they're doing that, that means a little less attack on conservative candidates, taking just a little bit of time away from going after Trump, from going after Ron DeSantis. So this is nothing but a positive for the Republicans. And remember to tell all, particularly the Generation Z voters in your life, if they vote for Biden over Cornel West, they hate black people. Just do it. Let's just lean into that. I like it. Push the button.
What's trending? The sports ball.
It's very quickly, because I feel like this is my favorite story in the history of the world. We went through the LIV Golf controversy, being told over and over and over again by PGA leadership, along with politicians, not completely on both sides of the aisle, but there was a lot of bipartisanship in calling out the Saudi involvement, Saudi dollars funding the LIV Golf tournament. And if you even watch one of those games, one of those competitions, you don't support American democracy. You support the murder of journalists. You are a horrible person. And then they merge. And then after all of this, they're merging.
I was surprised to see this. I was very surprised.
Here's why you should not have been surprised. When they were going after Saudi involvement, they were doing that merely to try to shame people away from making a decision that hurts the PGA business. That's all it was ever about. This is, in a way, it's related to when you change your logo as a corporation to the pride flag. You're doing it for social currency. You're doing it because you want to bring in a certain audience. You want to expand your audience, and you think that's the way to do it. They were doing a version of that. You think they care about any of the Saudi issues of human rights or democracy? You think they care about any of that? No. All they cared about was not wanting a competitor in a world in which they didn't have any competition. And then all of a sudden, not only is it some competition, it's viable competition because of all the money that's involved. We're not going to let you play if you play for them. That started to go away a little bit, and then it completely went away. And now it's to the point where we're merging, and we're not supposed to point out the positions that they previously took just a few months ago. And he's getting called out, the PGA Tour commissioner, David Faber on CNBC, called out Jay Monahan.
You're describing a scenario under which PIF at some point could have the majority of the economics, correct me if I'm wrong, of this entity. Essentially, the Saudis sort of, people will say, oh, they control golf around the world. I'm just curious as to what you think the response is going to be.
Well, listen, a lot of people have been reading about the tension. And that we've talked a lot. And I said previously that we were going down our path, they were going down theirs. And today, that tension goes away. The litigation is dropped. We're announcing to the world that on behalf of this game, we're coming together.
Where did all your values go? Why don't they ever just come out and say, eh, come on, you bought that. Come on, dum-dum, you bought that. You actually thought we cared about that. Clearly you knew we were just taking that position out of a business necessity, right? Clearly you knew that. That's what he should do. He should just look David Faber, is that his name? Yeah, David Faber in the eye and say, yeah, we were, hey, dummy, we were fooling you the entire time. You knew, dummy. Come on, you knew, right? We kind of always did it with a wink and a nod. I don't even know how to... I couldn't point out Saudi Arabia on a map. That's what he should have said. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. We're back with The Big Local after this.
Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is The Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It is 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle and instead we focus on all of the attention that your communities deserve. And we start in Bellevue, where another pot shop robbery occurred. We've been seeing a lot of this happen over the course, frankly, of the last several years. It's driven almost exclusively by a change in the law that says that if you're a thief, so long as you don't get violent, and so long as you're not doing it right in front of a cop who can stop you, once you get into your car, they can't pursue you. You can just drive off. You don't even have to speed. You can just drive off. And usually these are criminals who are in stolen vehicles. They go into a pot shop. Sometimes they do the polite thing in the context of these crimes in like just walking into the shop to rob it. But in many other instances, they just drive the stolen cars through the storefront. Sometimes they do it in the middle of the day. Sometimes they do it in the middle of the night. But the consistency here is that pot shops are getting hit because, number one, they're a cash-heavy business. Number two, their product is worth a lot on the streets. And number three, they know they can get away with it for the most part. But in this case, luckily, we have an instance in which the suspects didn't get away with it. Because the police were able to use air tags that were hidden in the cash registers to track these four suspects from Bellevue into the city of Kent. Now, in this case, they allegedly hit the Higher Leaf Cannabis Shop about 10:45 or so last night. And according to King 5, they say three cash registers were taken from the business. And every single one of them contained the Apple AirTag. Now, those Apple AirTags, you've probably seen them. Maybe some of you have one. I put them in my luggage. Just this little beacon that allows you to track the location of wherever the AirTag happens to be via your phone. And this is a very smart way to go ahead and track a stolen item.
However, through tracking technology that this store uses, they were actually able to track some money and product that was taken from the store to this location here in Kent.
That's Bellevue PD Captain Landon Barnwell speaking with King 5 TV. They were able to track it down specifically to an apartment complex in Kent. All suspects were then taken into custody. It happened this morning, the arrest, around 1 a.m. or so. They say several of the suspects tried to flee, but police were able to utilize canines to track them down and arrest them. Because again, so long as they didn't get into a car, they could be chased. Foot chases are fine. And still, we can use canines. I know in California, they're trying to ban them because I guess police canines are racist or something. This is apparently this tool, the AirTag technology, which obviously is not intended to stop this kind of crime. But apparently it's being used a lot more often by businesses because they need to do something to mitigate some of the losses.
These trackers, just like with, you know, with phones and all of these other, you know, as technology advances these days, there's a lot of capabilities. And absolutely, we will use, everything that we can to hold these folks accountable that commit these kind of crimes.
And the good news is in Bellevue, they actually have the staff to put on something like this. Whereas sometimes the staffing, especially in the city, we don't talk about during this segment. Sometimes they're so understaffed that an issue like this might be put on the back burner. Again, not by intent, but because they just don't have the manpower. And again, it all depends on what time of day it happens, what day it happens. In this case, thankfully, no one was hurt during this robbery because it happened right as they were open still. But no one was hurt. And I think you're going to be shocked to learn that of the four, they're all young. Two of them are minors. One is barely an adult. An 18-year-old, a 22-year-old, and two 17-year-olds. All male. They're the suspects. They've been booked into both the ones who aren't minors, King County Jail, the ones who are minors, into the King County Detention Center. I'm willing to bet they come from broken homes, although we're not supposed to talk about that because, well, it's an inconvenient truth tying a lot of these things together. We're not supposed to say anything. Meanwhile, speaking of crimes, in Renton, Renton PD are warning business owners that there's a new scam happening, and it's actually quite inventive. You almost are impressed by this level of scam, if not for the fact that they get caught. But I imagine it's really easy to get involved in becoming a victim here because thieves apparently have figured out how to steal from the businesses using those digital registers, the credit card machines. The individual will come up, they'll buy, you know, whatever it is they're buying. And they say, oh, you know, I would normally use my Apple Pay on my phone, but my phone screen is broken, and so I can't type in the code, the passcode, so I can actually use the credit card for the Apple Pay. But don't worry, just if you can give me this terminal, let me type in my own credit card number, and I'll be able to pay that way. And then, of course, the person complies.
Some businesses, when you go to enter your PIN, they might look away because it just gives that person maybe some more privacy. But now, really, they're just going to have to really pay attention.
Why do they have to pay attention? Because according to the Renton PD, they say, in one instance recently, this was going on, an employee became concerned after observing the suspect entering what appeared to be several different numbers into the machine. The employee then took the device from the suspect and called the store manager up to the counter, at which point both suspects fled on foot from that location. Cindy Morris is with Renton PD. She spoke with our sister station, Cairo News Radio.
What they're doing is they're running a refund transaction while using this device, utilizing credit card numbers that are basically just listed on their phone somewhere.
I'm not going to pretend that that's not somewhat creative and impressive. I'm glad it failed, but apparently it's not foolproof, right? I mean, you have to be paying attention. And if you're not paying attention, to Cindy Morris's point, maybe you turn away as an employee because you don't want to look at the PIN number and you want to show some level of privacy and respect to the individual, you know, depending on how quickly they can put in those numbers. Well, they could steal a lot of money. In fact, they say after reviewing the point of sale activity, it was discovered the suspect had conducted several manual refund requests on two different credit card numbers for a total of $1,050. Renton PD says the involved employee advised the suspects were not using Apple Pay because she was able to briefly observe both suspects' phone screens, which appeared to show a listing of several credit card numbers. So had it not been for the hawkeye of this employee, if she wasn't paying that close attention, these two might have gotten away with this. And I'm wondering how many others have gotten away with this, because I don't know how easy it is, or how, not how easy it is to track this, because I imagine it's quite easy with the technology, but how, because I'm not familiar with this industry, that you, any industry, frankly, that uses these devices. Do you go at the end of the day? Do you, with a eagle eye, do you look at, I think I said hawkeye, an eagle eye, do you actually look at the numbers to see whether or not you gave, you know, two $1,000 refunds? I guess it depends on the store. But, you know, again, kudos to them for finding out. And then finally, we give you another update to the controversy in Redmond, where Mayor Angela Burney announced a new salary commission after she disbanded the last Citizens Salary Commission, after it proposed an increase to $115,000 for part-time city council members from $19,000. They were proposing $115,000, which is, of course, absurd. And apparently, at least according to the mayor, that this commission was not paying close attention to the rules. They weren't following the guidelines as to how to move forward with conversing about these issues and then ultimately voting on them. So she disbanded the commission, and then she just created a new one. Instead of increasing salaries, the mayor says she would be a bigger fan, she tells Cairo News Radio, of just doing sort of a standard cost of living adjustment.
It'll be up to our next set of commissioners to decide what the appropriate amount is. Historically, it's been more of a COLA adjustment.
She says if the increase had been approved, she would have been forced to lay off several workers within the city because they just can't afford $115,000. My position hasn't changed on this. I think $19,000, even for a part-time position, is too low. I think that we should be paying lawmakers a lot more. And it's very easy to say, hey, do we really need to pay either this wealthy lawmaker more or this horrible lawmaker more? And certainly, I would say on an individual, in an individual case, I would say, no, of course not. I don't want to give, you know, a city council member who's a socialist more money. But I do want better people to step up and run. And there are a lot of people who I think could be effective lawmakers, but financially, they're just not in a position to take the time away from their full-time job or even maybe two part-time jobs in order to run. And if we want a government that's not just run by the uber wealthy, we have to make sure we're doing what we can in order to pay them, not necessarily a quote-unquote living wage, because this is a part-time job, and these are people who have presumably other jobs. But I do think that we should pay them enough where these folks wouldn't be struggling, because there are going to be some people who would do an amazing job, but just financially, they can't afford to take on this position. And I think that that does a disservice to the communities that they otherwise would be serving. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. When we come back, you pick the news. Story number one, Lululemon CEO is standing by the firing of the employees who reported a robbery. Or story number two, a military whistleblower goes public with claims that the U.S. has secret UFO retrieval programs in place. That scares me. Please don't pick that story. 1-800-465-8770, your choice. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
You pick the topic on The Jason Rand Show.
Indeed, you do get to pick the news, and you went with the latest in the Lululemon, the Lululemon drama, controversy, depending on your perspective, I suppose, where the original reporting was that two employees out of the Atlanta, or one of the Atlanta retail shops, were fired because during a robbery, they were involved. They got involved physically trying to intervene and interfere with the shoplifting, but also because they called 911. And really, the 911 portion of this was what was spreading, certainly amongst conservatives, because I think it was, for the most part, only conservative media that picked this story up. And I think most people could reasonably say that if you're fired for calling 911, that is utterly shameful. and totally inappropriate. That's doing exactly what you're supposed to do. But Lululemon is out saying, and they said this last week, actually it had nothing to do with calling 911, but it was in interfering with the shoplifters because we have as a company a no engagement policy. The CEO, Calvin McDonald, was on CNBC today.
In this particular case, we have a zero tolerance policy that we train our educators on around engaging during a theft. Why? Because we put the safety of our team, of our guests, front and center. It's only merchandise. At the end, they're trained to step back, let the theft occur, know that there's technology and there's cameras and we're working with law enforcement.
So this is not a policy that is exclusive to Lululemon. In fact, frankly, I'm not aware of a policy that's different than this one at any retail shop. Now, maybe on a hyper-local level, like a mom-and-pop shop, they don't really have their policies in place. But when we're talking about these major retailers, this is true pretty much everywhere. In fact, I'd be shocked to find out if there are any national chains that don't have this policy. And they're doing that mostly for, certainly this is what they say, and I believe them, that this is about safety. It's really about a lawsuit. They don't want to get sued if anyone gets hurt, but this is about the safety of the employees.
Unfortunately, in this situation, the educators knowingly broke the policy, engaged with the theft, the thieves across multiple points, including following them out of the store. So post-investigation and the zero tolerance policy, which is well known, that was what resulted in the termination.
So I have all sorts of comments. You know, he stands by his decision, so be it. And obviously it wasn't a decision, at least originally made by the CEO, right? That he doesn't get involved in these kinds of issues. The only reason why he's involved now is because it became a media story. I understand his policy and I generally accept it. In that I don't want someone to get injured or worse or have a staff member, not a customer getting injured or worse, all to stop some degenerates who are stealing Lululemon tights and like the yoga pants, right? I don't want anyone to get hurt. And it is certainly true that there are cameras, there are different pieces of technology that can be used in order to track down the suspects, the thieves. However, I understand why the individuals got involved, and I think this speaks to a larger issue about the culture of lawlessness. And it is true in Atlanta the same way it's true in Seattle, where the perception is we are allowing society in general, we are all allowing criminals to get away with this kind of thing on a regular basis, that you hear story after story after story on this show and elsewhere about retail establishments getting hit with shoplifting to the point we brought you this story yesterday out of Chicago where Walgreens is only having for two browsable aisles and the rest is behind lock and key that you have to order through a kiosk. And they're doing this in large part to stop the shoplifting. We've heard story after story out of retailers in San Francisco that have closed down because they cannot stay in business due to all of the theft. In New York City, Manhattan, you've seen retailers say, enough is enough. We're going to have to close down. We've had here in Seattle some Bartels. Remember the Bartel in downtown Seattle or Pioneer Square right by the stadium? That one closed down in large part because of the crime. And when it continues to happen over and over and over again, and you don't get the sense that anyone is paying a price, regardless of whether or not you're committed to your job at Lululemon or anywhere else, you might feel an instinct to get involved because enough is enough, that we can't sit by and allow this kind of crime to continue. It's not an environment that is safe, and it's not an environment with which we want to live. Because what it says about just the rules in our society, we have rules. You're supposed to follow them. And we're seeing people break the rules and then go unpunished. And at some point, it's going to catch up to individuals in various ways to the point where I'm willing to bet that is in large part why these two individuals decided to get involved. I'm willing to bet that's why they did something. I imagine they know the policy. And if memory serves, these employees have had to suffer through other instances of shoplifting, or at least this particular store. I believe they knew the policy. But something in them took over. And they said, enough is enough. This is not going to happen anymore. I have too much respect for my community. Again, this is completely separated from Lululemon. This is about respect for community. That's where the whole idea of vigilante justice comes in, is because you don't feel like the authorities are doing a good enough job or any job at all in tackling the issues. And I, of course, I've taken the position many times where I'm obviously against vigilante justice, even though I understand it, but it has nothing to do with police and their unwillingness to work. They're very willing to do stuff. They just don't have the staff. They don't have the resources. And they're fighting an uphill battle because you've got lawmakers locally and at the state level, both here in Seattle and Washington and Atlanta and Georgia, where you've got folks resistant to allowing police to do their jobs. And they're quite doing the opposite. They're forcing them not to do their jobs. At some point, everyone has that breaking point, even when it doesn't impact them directly. This didn't impact them directly. Their clothing wasn't getting stolen. Their wallets weren't getting stolen. They weren't losing any money, not at least in the short term. Long term, if a store closes, obviously that impacts them. But in the short term, they weren't directly impacted. They acted because it wasn't about the store. It was about where they live. It's to the point where we've seen stories of individuals who are in shops as a customer intervening. Again, wrong mood to intervene in a theft. You don't know whether or not the person is armed. You don't know whether or not that person is truly dangerous. But at some point you say, I take pride in where I live. I don't like the idea of living in a city of lawlessness, because we know lawlessness begets more lawlessness, begets more lawlessness. Look at Chicago. Look at DC, Philadelphia, San Francisco, LA, Seattle, Portland. Lawlessness begets more lawlessness. And it's time to step up and say, no, this is a failure of city leadership. Whenever something like this happens, it's a failure of city leadership. This isn't just a once in a blue moon occurrence. These are happening. These shoplifting events are happening all across the country every single day with consistency. And it's due in large part to policy. It's due in large part to an environment that politicians helped to create. Activists did too. The voters did too. But at some point, you're just willing to say, you know what? I'm pushing back and I don't care the consequences. It's a terrifying place for anyone to be, because when you don't care about the consequences, you don't realize that maybe you're putting yourself in harm's way. But I totally understand why anyone, whether it's a Lululemon staff member or a Lululemon customer, I understand why they might want to push back and get involved. It's just sad that it's had to come to that, because so much of this is wholly preventable. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.